Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right co-host Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
And on the political left, welcome to the studio, Josh Cantor.
Thanks for having me back.
Welcome. Never introduced you correctly, but Alliance for a Better Utah chairman.
That works.
Okay, very
good. I feel like I'm doing my job, by the way, Natalie. I got some feedback from a listener last week that I was always a troll on the show. And so I feel good. Like, at the end of the day, that's like a compliment when somebody from the left says, oh, he's just a troll on the show. And I'm like, you know, hey.
you've arrived at troll
status. I feel
it,
yeah. And I feel it. And honestly, it brings me some joy.
Sounds good. I want to talk about a lot of things, but one of the things on my list is Joe Biden coming to town for a fundraiser. Park City charging like $2,800 a seat. We're going to get some of these Democratic candidates, aren't we, Josh?
Yeah, I think we sure are. I mean, I think Utah matters. There's money here, first of all, that people need to obviously try to get. And some of these folks will roll through Salt Lake and through Park City.
Yeah.
It matters in the Democratic primary.
Uh-huh. So Biden got some bad news this week. I don't know. The polls are a dime a dozen. But you get a poll that shows Sanders on top, followed by Warren, or they're tied. But Biden had dropped to third in this most recent polling. I'm not a big fan of the polling, but he's been running ads where he talks about he's the only one that can beat, you know, President Donald Trump. And
yeah,
it's hard if you're not the top candidate to do that, top candidate in your party.
Well, you know, yes, it is. But like we've said for months, you go back and I think that the liberal off contest that's going on right now is primarily set up to allow Donald Trump to have four more years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, the Democrats won't get reasonable about who their presidential choice will be until 4 years from now. And it's sad, but that's the nature of these terms. And that's why you see most presidents, absent a major recession in their last year, in that last year of the first term, absent a major recession, I see most presidents get reelected.
They're in. Josh, I'd love to hear your commentary on, you know, the prevailing wisdom. A lot of important, well-versed politicos would say that the Democrats have to put up somebody that's more moderate than Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren and let those two are leading.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think to Dan's point, we might get that recession after all, so that might solve the problem. But I do think that
sad to watch. You know, I have thought it was horrible to see Americans actually like hopeful that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has some kind of health problem and takes her off the court.
I didn't say I was looking forward to it.
But here we are on the Democrat side looking forward to a recession.
My husband has some opinions about that, but I'll let those stay private. But Josh, continue with your line of thinking.
I think the Democratic Party is split, and there's a movement of obviously people my age, all of our age, who are looking for a moderate and are still fans of Joe Biden's and Kamala Harris and some of those kind of positions and candidates. And then you've got a younger generation who is rightly scared about what's happening to the climate and who's scared about what's happening to the economy and who's scared about student debt and all the issues that these guys are talking about. But in fairness, again, you know, none of these presidential candidates, they may drive policy, but they don't pass laws, right? So you still need Congress to go along with it,
Daniel,
unless you're Donald Trump. Then you don't need Congress to do anything.
As executives have shown in the previous years, executive orders are starting to matter more and more.
Yeah. Dan, you saw that the former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh has now announced a 2020 run against Trump. It's an internal challenge. This is somebody who felt like he kind of got Donald Trump elected or felt like he was solidly in Trump's camp, and now he's going after him. Have you seen any of his political commentary or?
No, but I mean, I've seen, you know, some of the things that he's
said. Yeah, Weld from Massachusetts, who's also in this camp, another Republican who's challenging the president.
Yeah, I mean, these also run candidates are all, there's always kind of a chirping in the party about worry about a midterm election. Honestly, I understand, you know, the concerns about President Trump, I guess, from a lot of perspectives. That said, Joe Walsh is not going to, he doesn't stand a credible threat to the institution that Donald Trump has built over the last four years. He just doesn't.
I agree with you. You take any different there?
No, Josh? Not really. I mean, I think, you know, for me, it's kind of a where's the Mitt Romneys of the world who could challenge Trump on a different level, not these kind of guys like Weld and Walsh who what voter are they going to pull away from Donald Trump?
Yeah.
You've seen this time and time again, though, where somebody stands up and overestimates their contribution to any campaign or whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. I got this person. I created this person, mm-hmm. which is kind of what Joe Walsh was saying.
Success has a thousand fathers.
Yeah, that's right. And so you look at all those things, right? And time and time again, you see somebody jump off the cruise ship and complain about the direction of the ship. The ship is gone, Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, and whether you like it or not, he's your candidate.
Yeah. What are both of you thinking about right now with these escalating trade wars with China? Since our last program, China slapped on some more tariffs on us. United States responded, adding more to the Chinese goods. We're going to go into the holiday season with a lot of products that are a big deal during the holiday season with big-time tariffs on them. It's a tax on the American families. Donald Trump's interesting on this because he's essentially saying, I know, but I'm the man to take on China, and I'm going to do it. And he actually acts like I'm willing to take a slower economy because I'm going to bring China to the table for fair trade. Josh?
Well, he's also the guy who claimed that we were going to have 4% growth and 3 or 4% growth constantly, and we're back to 2%. And, you know, he's also the guy who's claimed that China will pay the tariffs and Mexico will pay for the wall. And the reality is it's the American citizen and the American farmer and all these other people who are paying for it. So if he's got a long-term strategy that works and gets China to respect our intellectual property rights, maybe in 20 years that'll be a good thing.
But him is what you're saying.
I won't support him. You misunderstood that.
Yeah, I want to make sure.
Make sure we're clear here. I will be voting for whoever the Democratic Party puts up. Let's be clear about that.
If-then statement. You know.
Dan, what did you make of the president tweeting that he ordered U.S. companies to immediately look for alternatives to China? Bring your business somewhere else.
I think you've got a president who has large companies who have large presence in China saying to the president, we're looking for outs, right? And so if I'm the president, I stand up and say, hey, I'm ordering them back. And so it makes it look like, you know, in some ways they're saving face with China. These companies are. The president's kind of told them or whatever. It's not going to be terribly effective because China is a huge world power as far as economics is going.
Yeah.
They have the cheapest labor base. And as we continue to see from Josh's party, the drive to continue to make our labor costs more expensive, we're only going to see China be more important in that trade relation. And so that's dangerous, right? But look at the inverse of that. Japan, on the other hand, now, China was the largest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds. Japan now is. Hmm. And you're watching China dump, but you're seeing other countries pick up. And so at the end of the day, I'm not as concerned necessarily about the trade war. I'd rather not have one. Mm-hmm. But that being said, we need a path forward on protecting intellectual property. That's an important part of it, but also balancing trade relations.
It's really interesting for me as a Republican and an economist to watch as the conservative economic views have changed from we want free trade, that's the way to do it, raises standards for everyone, to a narrative of China's a special case. Hmm. It's okay if we thump on China.
Well, they've been defecting for so long, right? If you look at this as a zero-sum game in game theory, right? And everybody's kind of going along and everybody's cooperating. That's what kind of the early parts of NAFTA were intended to do. And everybody was cooperating, right? And China just sat on the outside and was defecting and receiving money.
Josh, do you want to add something there?
Well, I still think there's just the language involved too, right? I mean, this is, recognizing that he can't do it. This idea that he's ordering somebody. I mean, this is just another ongoing Trump, becoming something that he's not, or trying to make the country seem like it's something that it's not. And I think it's really disturbing.
Yeah, really interesting. You know, in our remaining time and just talking about the economy and what's going on, the term uncertainty, it's all caps for me. And the stock market, the volatility that you're seeing, ultimately that's got to influence consumer sentiment. And the last thing to fall before a recession is consumers. In my judgment here. In other words, when consumers start to panic, it goes fast. You're a businessman, Dan. Do you see that any differently?
Well, but I haven't seen the panic, mm-hmm. right?
And I'm just saying that with volatility,
that's
something that starts to get you there.
Sure, but I think you still see a lot of presence in the U.S. economy as far as what we're seeing and leading up into expectations for revenue for, the Christmas holiday from a retail standpoint or whatever. I'm seeing from a business standpoint, I'm seeing more and more national retailers, especially looking at Utah and trying to be in Utah. I see more and more land prices escalating. So I, on this side of things, I will tell you, I know the rhetoric. I know what everybody's saying. I just don't see it on the ground.
Yeah. Josh, you have an alternative view or?
Well, not so much alternative, but I think it's, you know, as Dan says, I agree, you don't really see it on the ground yet. First of all, I think these things, all of a sudden, you don't see them, and then all of a sudden you see them real, real fast. So I think that's one concern. And you know, we know the markets do not like uncertainty. That's not a question mark. That is a pretty stated fact, and they didn't like it. You know, Republicans were big on pushing that during the Obama years, and now we're big on pushing it during the Trump years. But the reality is he opens his mouth and it moves markets, and not in a positive way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Josh Cantor and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about lots of local news. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the rational right.
Josh Cantor on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the productive middle, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We kind of pulled one on Josh there, didn't we?
Yeah, we got rational. You got productive.
And you're just the left.
Out left field.
I am usual. Where I am and totally comfortable with it.
I want to talk about the political drama that's about ready to ascend upon the state of Utah and our country, just having some fun here. So we've got an active mayoral election for our capital city, really competitive race between two highly qualified women. We're 10 months away from the Republican primary for the governor's race, which is almost like picking your governor. Sorry to say that. We've got the presidential election kicking off in a big way, Biden coming, you know, what we're seeing with town halls and the like. And then we have all these congressional challenges going on. Dan, you know the most about the 4th Congressional District. This is where Dan McKay is right now. But we have Jay McFarland from KSL, Kathleen Anderson.
South Jordan, you got Jay McFarland, South Jordan resident. You got Kathleen Anderson, Davis County resident.
Dan
you,
Hemmert.
You got Dan
Draper?
Hemmert,
he
Utah
Draper?
County.
Okay.
So he's down at Utah County.
Okay.
Actually lives in CD3. And you've got Kim Coleman, West Jordan resident. You know, so you start to see some of these names starting to percolate
to the
top. Not to
forget Ben McKay.
Ben McAdams.
McAdams.
Yeah. Sorry about
he's
that,
He's going to love that, Ben.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Dan's long-lost brother.
Something like that.
Yeah, Josh, what do you think this feels like to be Representative McAdams?
Well, he had to know it was coming. I mean, whether it was going to be Mia Love jumping back in the race, and it sounds like maybe she won't have to jump back in, and it's been ranked, I think, Dan, you were saying the
number one
race in the country.
Yeah.
So number one for the Republicans to get. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, and the number one competitive race.
Most,
so,
yeah, like super competitive.
Could go either way.
And could, yeah. Well, it could go either way, but honestly, it should be, it's a must win for the Republicans is basically what the national papers are saying. And from a competitive standpoint, it's a must win, right? So if the Republicans are going to take back the House and they can't take that seat, it won't matter.
And if you're Ben McAdams, I would assume you have to be thinking this is actually good news. These guys will push each other farther and farther to the right. And CD4 is a pretty moderate place. So we'll see what happens.
Dan, you made an interesting point to me about the 1st Congressional District. This is Rob Bishop's current district, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Where you have the Kaysville mayor, is it Katie Witt?
Mm-hmm.
Tina Cannon?
Tina Cannon, former county council person, or county councilman, councilwoman out in Morgan County.
You made the point that everyone talks about CD4, but CD1 is actually the interesting one. And give our audience the reason.
Well, CD4 is going to be this war.
Swing.
Yeah, it's going to be this swing seat in Utah that's going to be, you know,
you'll get someone for 4 years, you'll get someone for two, get someone for four.
Yep. And honestly, you know, you do that because you can only stand so many of those campaigns. I mean, you know,
constant
even if
campaign.
Somebody wins three or four, even Jim Matheson said, that's it. You know, I've won enough brutal races, but I'm done with that CD4 element.
Yeah.
But you look at CD1, whoever wins that Republican seat is most likely to be there for 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's that, in my opinion, that should be the race everybody focuses on. But won't, because it won't be as high profile or won't have the money involved in it.
Can I just say that does depend a little bit on what you and your colleagues do to Proposition 4 and independent redistricting in 2021.
What's Prop 4? I haven't heard of this. What's this thing?
Dan,
it's this thing passed by these things called voters.
Hmm.
Perhaps you've heard of them.
I'll have to read about it.
Dan and Josh, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is in the news again for banning guns in churches. They changed a word from saying it's inappropriate to it's prohibited.
Yeah.
I was happy to see that. I'm active LDS. I don't see any reason for those guns to be there, yeah, in place of worship.
I have never carried a gun to church, candidly, you know, been going to church for a long time. Never carried a gun.
Are you a concealed weapon holder?
And I'm a concealed weapon permit
holder. Why does that not surprise me, Josh?
Come on, it shouldn't, right? It's part of like joining the club.
When you're up at the legislature and you pat someone on the back, you feel these holsters.
Yeah, that's yeah, careful where you pat, right? But I just say at the end of the day, I don't know what this actually changes from the inside. Like, I don't know a lot of people who are bringing guns to church. I know law enforcement on a regular basis comes to church. My question is, the interesting thing about this element is, why now? Why is the church making this an issue? And that's what makes me interested.
I have a hope that it's one of many of these sorts of adjustments that are being made. I don't know. Josh?
Yeah, I obviously don't know anything about the politics behind why they would have done it.
If you'd like to know more, I can help you.
Thank you.
We have a 1-800 number.
You do?
And two gentlemen who or women.
The Book of Mormon the other night. Was that a beginning of my education?
Look in the program. There's some advertising.
Okay. But I think it's, you know, if it gives people peace of mind, there are obviously religious institutions around the country have banned guns on their premises for a long, long time. I mean, even in my wife's home state of Oklahoma, you walk into church and there's the sign saying no firearms. And so I think if it gives people a peace of mind, it's a great step. And maybe that's part of a bigger quilt that they're really looking at.
I will say that I have been in church when I've had fear.
Yeah.
Where I've had somebody, you know, that was being disruptive. And a Salt Lake PD was in my church house and he helped escort the guy out. And it just felt really uncomfortable. So you get weird things.
Yeah.
Places of worship. Okay. I want to ask about the Utah policy poll, Dan, that took on term limits. Basically, yeah, that the public, what, like 75% approval for term limits, yeah, in our legislature.
It basically showed that Republicans, Democrats, and independents all favored, you know, term limits for legislators, right? And, you know, okay.
Give us some stats. This is interesting.
Well, I mean, I love the sentiment, right? But the legislature is a volunteer job, and this will be mind-blowing for most people. But the legislature pays about $15,000 a year, okay? Most of my constituents think I make north of $80,000, $100,000 to be in the legislature. It's a $15,000 a year job, okay? So most people are willing
to
do that.
City council pays better, most
yeah,
places.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Our city council in my city, they all make more than the legislator does. Fine.
And what's the work balance? I mean, is there a lot more work to be in the legislature?
Oh, I don't know.
Similar.
I would argue it's probably similar.
Okay.
It's just much more condensed when you're in the legislature. I mean, you can't have a full-time job during the session.
Yeah.
Right?
When you get this lucrative radio gig.
And you get the lucrative volunteer radio gigs like this. So, but the average House member, I can't remember what the stat was, but the average House member was around
7 years, I thought.
It was, yeah, 6 to 7
6 point
years.
Something.
Yeah, 6 point something. And then the average senator is just over 12 years is how long it is. So actually, term limits as they're being proposed would actually not, on the average, impact anyone, right?
On average.
On,
yeah,
average, right? And granted, some will be kicked out and some will leave that were, you know, some. Anyways, the crazy thing about it, and I was a term limits guy before I got elected, and everybody says, oh, of course, he's sold out to the establishment. The one thing I will tell you about term limits is what happens when you kick the legislators out of the room early. It means two things. The bureaucrats and the lobbyists will run the place. I have seen it every time. So there was major turnover in the House 4 years ago. And when they turned over the House, I mean, it was more than 30% of the legislators in the House left. And when they turned over the House, that very next year, with all these new lawmakers came in, there were all these bad repeat bills that had been repeated and kicked out 6 years over the previous 6 years. And because all this institutional knowledge left the body, these bills came back.
Josh, I'm a believer on this. I do think that you want legislators to be experienced and knowledgeable, because if not, the public servants and the lobbyists are the only knowledgeable people around.
Yeah, I'm going to be on your guys' side of this. I'm not a fan. I've never been a fan personally of term limits. I understand why people think they're important and think they might work. For me, I'm more of an idealist, and I would say what I think works is called the ballot box. And if you, yeah, don't like what your legislator is doing, people need to go vote and vote them out of office. And that's the most effective term limit there is.
Yeah.
I teach public finance at the University of Utah. One of the things I teach in public finance is market failure when markets don't work, but I also teach government failure mm-hmm. when government doesn't work. And I always use the quote of the Russian czar that said, "I don't rule Russia, 10,000 clerks do."
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty right? good, right?
Yeah.
It's the power of the bureaucracy.
The Politburo, sure. Yep. And I have seen it time and time again in Congress, especially. You know, Jason Chaffetz, love him or leave him, right? I see the look on
leave
Josh's
him.
Face. Okay. But he wrote this whole book, whether or not, you know, the thing
fiction,
I took away
I
from
believe.
His book.
Fiction.
Well, the thing I took away from his book is in a lot of ways, the bureaucrats really are running the country. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, it is on autopilot. And whether or not that's good for the state or, you know, that kind of thing, I argue it's not. Mm-hmm. But I understand the talking point of term limits is very convenient. Everybody gets mad at legislative bodies but loves their own legislator, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I have talked to time and time again, those legislators, they're all self-interested, terrible jerks, but not mine.
Yeah.
Mine's phenomenal.
I've certainly always felt that way.
Yeah.
I really have.
Yeah, no, that's
I've
right.
Well, which is why Congress's approval rating is, 13, 14%,
yeah.
and yet everybody gets reelected. So,
Josh, word on the street, just interested in your perspective
True.
From the left, but word on the street is that tax reform is not gaining any traction in the state, quite unpopular. The public doesn't see it as a pressing issue.
Well, in this one, I guess maybe I'm hoping just because of different reasons that the public is right. But it seems to me that this has still not been well vetted to the public and not mm-hmm. really well discussed in public. And so I think the legislature has a lot of work to do to convince the public where this needs to go, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. They just have a PR problem.
Well, I'm down with that. I get it. The legislature is horrible at messaging, right?
Mm-hmm. We're great because they have 104 people.
Yeah, the legislature's job is dig in, figure out an issue, and vote how they feel their constituents would do, right? That's a legislator's job. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, as 104 legislators, their job isn't to make a budget, go out to the public, and sell the concept, right? Because you can't force feed people who don't want to be fed. At the end of the day, tax reform sounds like tax increases. And so people are trying to ferret what's, you know, reform versus what's increase. And so there's that element. And I think everybody kind of breaks up into different camps. What I will say is, from a state level and the budget perspective, we fund three things. One, we fund the education system. Two, we fund Medicaid. And three, we fund roads.
You build roads.
You want to talk about those three things that we fund as a state. And my question for you is, if you want us to stop funding one of those two things, please tell us how to do it, or three things. Well, it's two because Josh reminded me I said three, and he's right. But see, education has a promise,
has it
right?
Earmarked, yeah.
It's earmarked. But Medicaid and roads are not earmarked, at least not that same way.
So from the political middle, I'd just say I'm a big fan of the legislature getting ahead of this and addressing the structural issues, and I think the longer they wait, the harder it will get. But I don't see the need for just these massive changes. But I think there's some things you should do. So there'll be more to happen. Hey, we need to go to Gripes, but quickly before we do, it's rivalry week. BYU-Utah, do either of you have traditions? You go to the games? Josh, I know you're from out of state.
I'm from out of town.
Doesn't really mean much to
but
you.
But I got to be a U fan, not a BYU fan.
Okay,
see,
Dan?
See, everybody falls into their tribe.
Oh, he picked a good one,
he just chose his tribe. That's just weak.
Dan, do you have a tradition with the BYU-Utah game?
Salt Lake City chooses news. Salt Lake chooses University of Utah.
Some of our best interns have been from BYU,
Look,
I will say.
It's a great
if
school.
If we can't get rid of the athletic programs of the various schools, see, I just like to do that every once in a while just to remind people. But I you know, because again, I don't know why we, you know, spend so much money on major sports. That being said, I'm going to take BYU just because I'll be on the opposite of Josh,
yeah.
right?
And but you're an Aggie at heart.
I'm an Aggie, yeah. But I think if I was to rank them, I'd say Utah State is first, BYU is second, and University of Utah is third. But it's a close between second and third.
Okay. I loved Coach Whittingham's quote. So he's the coach of the University of Utah. He said, "I only go to Utah County for two reasons, to see my mom and to win football games." That's pretty good. Josh, do you have a gripe for us?
I've got two quick gripes. One is the Amazon is literally on fire, and we're complaining about $20 million and an apology. Makes no sense to me instead of dealing with the real issue. And the second is even though the argument will be Trump is Trump, he comes out, calls Jews who vote for Democrats ignorant and disloyal, and not a single member of our congressional delegation stood up and said that's not okay.
Yeah, good gripe. Dan?
All right, my gripe this week is about sports, and I know we don't get sporty on this show very often, but a quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts retired early, and his whole premise for retiring early is he's sick of being hurt, right? Uh-huh, just can't get better.
Yeah.
And so he resigns, and what do people do? They, like, boo him and tell him he's, like, weak and, like, you know.
What a millennial thing to do.
Yeah, right?
Can't handle pain.
Yeah, can't handle pain, and they, like, make fun of him and all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, football in and of itself has an institutional problem, and, you know, I guess we'll figure out a way to fix it eventually.
I'm going to second Dan's gripe and also gripe about the Book of Mormon play, which I hope to talk to you about off air, Josh. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been with Dan McKay and Josh Cantor. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.